Beethoven wasn't so great.
What do you mean Beethoven wasn't so great?
He never got his picture on bubblegum cards, did he? Have you ever seen his picture on a bubblegum card? How can you say someone is great who's never had his picture on bubblegum cards?
Good grief.
Why, thank you. My name is Dennis Lewin, and this is the first edition of the Dennis Lewin radio program, turning you on to classical music on BBS Internet Radio. With this radio program, every Saturday night, I will bring you the stories and history behind the greatest composers and musicians of all time, including Mozart, Bach, Beethoven, Stravinsky, Gershwin, Debussy, and more. For more information about me and this program, please check out my website, www.DennisLewinMusic.com. That's DennisLewinMusic.com, where you can find out information on how to sponsor this program or donate to it. Again, the website address is DennisLewinMusic.com. Famous birthdays worth noting on this date, March the 1st. The icon pianist and composer Frederick Chopin, 1810. The former Prime Minister of Israel Yitzhak Rabin, 1922. The great trombonist and band leader Glenn Miller, 1904. Actor-director Ron Howard, 1954. Singer and activist Harry Belafonte, 1927. And last but not least, the lead singer of The Who, Roger Daltrey, turned 64 years old today. Now that's amazing. Today's program should be a good one. For 1 hour, you will hear all about the life and times of the brilliant composer and pianist, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. So without further ado, let's get into the story about Tchaikovsky on the Dennis Lewin radio program, turning you on to classical music on BBS Internet Radio. Go to DennisLewinMusic.com for more information. Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky was born, the second of five sons and one daughter, to Ilya Petrovich and Alexandra Tchaikovsky on May the 7th, 1840, in the small town of Votkinsk, Russia. His father, Ilya, worked as a mining engineer in the Russian government mines, and Tchaikovsky's mother, Alexandra, was the second of his father's three wives, who was a native Russian with French ancestry. Growing up, music filled the air in Tchaikovsky's home, which contained a piano and a music machine called an orchestrion. This primitive jukebox machine plays music and is designed to sound like an orchestra, which is operated by a large pinned cylinder or by a music roll that makes it sound with organ-like pipes, percussion instruments, and sometimes with a piano attachment. Needless to say, the young Tchaikovsky was mesmerized by this music machine, as his younger brother Modest Tchaikovsky, the noted dramatist, librettist, and translator, stated, quote, "He couldn't hear enough of it." Through this orchestrion, Peter Tchaikovsky began his love affair with the music of Mozart, constantly listening to selections from Don Giovanni on it. Aside from the music of Mozart, the Tchaikovsky orchestrion's repertory also included the music of Rossini, Bellini, and Donizetti, whose Italian styles too made huge impressions on Tchaikovsky. At the age of 4 years old, Tchaikovsky began to experiment with the piano, and after his mother went on a visit to St. Petersburg, Tchaikovsky wrote his first piece of music with his younger sister Sasha, called Our Mama in St. Petersburg. When Tchaikovsky's mother Alexandra returned from her trip, she came back with a governess for her children by the name of Fanny Durbach. Durbach called the 4 years spent with the Tchaikovsky family the happiest time of her life. During her classes for the older Tchaikovsky children, 4-year-old Peter begged to be allowed to attend the sessions, and after a while, he far surpassed his older siblings in the fields of reading French and German. And although the young Tchaikovsky excelled when it came to learning, his emotional state of mind at this young age would begin to take a course for disaster. Here Fanny Durbach comments on the fragile child Tchaikovsky. Quote, "He was a child of glass. Any trifle could upset or wound him. A reproof, which would be slight to other children, would affect him deeply. A more severe admonition would alarm and upset him severely." In one source, it is explained that the young Tchaikovsky would often wake from his sleep in tears, complaining that he could not stop the music playing in his head. Because of this phenomenon, probably as a type of therapy, his parents decided to give him music lessons. Tchaikovsky began his piano instruction at the age of 5 with a local teacher by the name of Maria Pelchikova, and within 3 years, he surpassed his teacher in all piano achievements, including reading music. At the age of 8, the Tchaikovsky family moved to St. Petersburg. Here in St. Petersburg, Tchaikovsky was enrolled at the very fashionable academic school called Schmeling, and his piano studies continued with a teacher by the name of Filipov. But in that December, Tchaikovsky came down with a terrible case of the measles, and all schoolwork and piano studies were put on hold. In the year 1849, Tchaikovsky's father received a new appointment, and the family moved to Alepayevsk. Eventually, in the year 1850, Peter and his mother moved back to St. Petersburg. And in that September, at the age of 10, Tchaikovsky was enrolled at the preparatory class for the School of Jurisprudence, where he stayed for around 8 years. And although Tchaikovsky continued to excel at music, his academic studies got to the point of disastrous. He was well-liked by the staff and the students, but for some reason, he could not stay focused on his work. Here a school friend comments about Tchaikovsky, quote, "It needed all exceptional, ineffable charm of his personality to make you forget Tchaikovsky's absent-mindedness and carelessness." Also, during this period, Tchaikovsky would pick up the nasty habit of smoking that also brought him severe repercussions from the faculty. Later on, Tchaikovsky would comment about this addiction. Quote, "I found relief in smoking for my highly strung nerves. I love the bliss of tobacco smoke." This smoking addiction would become so overwhelming that Tchaikovsky later admitted that he found the habit no longer enjoyable, but rather an addiction. Also, at this point, Tchaikovsky's mother took Peter to a performance of Mikhail Glinka's A Life for the Tsar, which forever changed Tchaikovsky's life. Soon, his mother would leave Tchaikovsky behind in St. Petersburg and head back to her husband in Alepayevsk. And even though Tchaikovsky was getting older, his emotional ties to his mother and his father intensified, which affected his psyche terribly, causing him to weep constantly from depression. Tchaikovsky's 8-year stay at the School of Jurisprudence did give him some emotional stability, and it also defined his sexuality. This School of Jurisprudence was well known for its common practice of homosexuality, and Tchaikovsky began to have affairs with some of the boys' students. Soon, major tragedy would come to Tchaikovsky, when in June of 1854, his mother died of cholera. Needless to say, the 14-year-old Tchaikovsky was devastated, and he lived with that terrible day of his mother's loss for the rest of his life. That was the brilliant Emil Gilels at the piano with Zubin Mehta and the New York Philharmonic Orchestra performing some of the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto No. 1 in B-flat minor, Opus 23. You are listening to the Dennis Lewin Radio Program on BBS Internet Radio. Go to www.dennislewinmusic.com for more information. That's DennisLewinMusic.com. The most important thing that you can do for your body is to replenish it daily with nutrients that naturally diminish the aging process, daily stress, and other various problems. The NutraHealth Company provides its customers with the most efficient and effective quality nutrition and wellness products at the lowest possible prices anywhere. We're talking Roex, Premier Research Labs, Vitalogix, and Jigsaw Health. So what are you waiting for? Go to NutraHealth's website now at www.nutri.cc and order any of their state-of-the-art supplements. And again, the lowest prices anywhere. That's www.nutri.cc. This next segment is brought to you by the Dean Supply Company, a one-stop shopping emporium for bar supplies, restaurant supplies, food service supplies, restaurant equipment, catering supplies, glassware, kitchen items, janitorial supplies, paper products, and party supplies at the lowest possible prices anywhere. Go to www.deansupplyco.com and order whatever you need without leaving your business or home. That's www.deansupplyco.com. DeanSupplyCo.com. You are listening to the Dennis Lewin Radio Program on BBS Internet Radio. Go to www.DennisLewinMusic.com for more information. Tchaikovsky's immediate reaction to the loss of his mother was to surround himself with music, and within a few months of her death, Tchaikovsky began to get serious about writing composition. As far as his piano was concerned, Tchaikovsky performed mostly for his friends, and he indulged himself in the art of improvisation. And with this new serious approach, his father Ilya began to take a serious interest in his son's musical attempts, and he gave him the money to further his studies with Rudolf Kundinger, a very well-known piano teacher from Nuremberg. But after Tchaikovsky's father consulted with his son's new teacher about Peter's fate of becoming a famous musician, Kundinger told Ilya that aside from a good ear and a good memory, there was little to suggest that Tchaikovsky would ever become a great musician or a great composer. So with this, his father mandated to his son that he would finish his studies at the Ministry of Justice. Tchaikovsky graduated from the School of Jurisprudence on May the 25th, 1859, with the rank of counselor or desk clerk, placing him at the lowest position of the civil service ladder. But in the next month, Tchaikovsky was appointed to a higher position in the Ministry of Justice, and within a year's period, he was promoted again to the position of senior assistant, where he remained for the next 3 years. During his career in law, Tchaikovsky made the absolute minimum effort to keep his job, and aside from his social life, which he lived for, he despised his occupation in the legal world. While he continued to work there, Tchaikovsky enrolled in Nikolai Zaremba's musical classes at the Russian Musical Society, which would eventually be called the St. Petersburg Conservatory. The classes were held at the Mikhailovsky Palace, and his teacher Zaremba was just the right person to apply major discipline on the very free-spirited Tchaikovsky. And although Tchaikovsky was difficult, Zaremba treated him special, and he assured Tchaikovsky of his unquestionable talent. After this assurance, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky awoke from his lackadaisical attitude and began to put out what was deep inside of him. As stated by classmate Hermann LaRoche, quote, "From that moment, Peter Ilyich decided to cast off his idleness and took to his work with an energy that never failed him. In that next year, Nikolai Zaremba joined the staff at the now St. Petersburg Conservatory, and Tchaikovsky followed his teacher there. And although he did not give up his job at the ministry yet, Tchaikovsky enrolled at the music school, believing that he now had a shot at becoming a force in music. He did want to quit his legal job, but he waited until his father consented. From the years 1862 to 1865, Tchaikovsky studied harmony, counterpoint, and the art of the fugue with his teacher Zaremba, and instrumentation and composition under the St. Petersburg's first director and founder, the great Anton Rubinstein. Aside from his piano lessons, Tchaikovsky also studied the flute so that he could become a part of the new school's orchestra. After graduating from the St. Petersburg Conservatory, Tchaikovsky was approached and asked by Anton Rubinstein's younger brother Nikolai to become a professor of harmony, composition, and music history at the brand new Moscow Conservatory. And since his father Ilya was now retired, Tchaikovsky accepted the new position. This was not an easy decision for Tchaikovsky to make, because he now had to quit his basically secure job and travel to Moscow, which was a much more unpolished musical society than St. Petersburg. This move was also difficult because it meant that Tchaikovsky would have to be separated from his family again, which would cause him day in and day out depression. But as far as his musical career, this move turned out to be a good one for Tchaikovsky. Aside from his teaching position, Tchaikovsky began to produce more works, and in the year 1865, he had the fortune of having one of his newer pieces conducted by the famous Johann Strauss. This work is called Characteristic Dances. It was also in this year that Tchaikovsky made his podium debut by conducting an original composition called Overture in F. 3 years later, in the year 1868, Tchaikovsky announced to his family and friends that he was engaged to be married. The girl was a soprano singer by the name of Desiree Arto, and because Tchaikovsky had been taken under wing by Nikolai Rubinstein and a few other friends at this time, these friends objected to the marriage, and they basically told Tchaikovsky that his notion of marriage was insane, due to them knowing of Tchaikovsky's homosexuality. Fortunately, perhaps, Desiree must have sensed this in Tchaikovsky, and she ended up marrying someone else. And even though this hurt Tchaikovsky, the two remained close friends for a long time. Again, that was the brilliant Emil Gelels at the piano with Zubin Mehta and the New York Philharmonic Orchestra performing some of Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1 in B-flat minor, Opus 23. If you would like to sponsor this radio program or make a donation to it, all you have to do is go to my website, www.DennisLewinMusic.com, for more information. Let's get back to Tchaikovsky. Thank you. in the year 1868. The Mighty Five, Russian composers, consisting of Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, Mili Balakirev, Cesar Cui, Alexander Borodin, and Modest Mussorgsky, approved of Tchaikovsky's first movement of his first symphony in G minor, called Winter Daydreams. But during the writing of this symphony, Tchaikovsky's mental woes would attack him and instill in him a major lack of confidence, which created massive headaches and endless nights of insomnia. At one point, Tchaikovsky actually thought that he was going to die before the completion of the work. But to his own surprise, with this piece, he began to make a serious mark in music. For the next 7 to 10 years, Tchaikovsky continued to teach at the Moscow Conservatory, producing many great artists, including Sergei Rachmaninoff. He also continued to write much composition, but unlike his idol Mozart, Tchaikovsky's greatest works wouldn't come until later in life. In the year 1871, Tchaikovsky started a diary. In this diary, many writings talk about his desire to find one person who could fulfill his life. Also in these writings, it is clear that Tchaikovsky was tormented with his addictions to alcohol, cigarettes, and with his gay sexuality. In the years 1874 and 1875, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky would give the world two composition gifts. The first would be the Piano Concerto No. 1 in B-flat minor, Opus 23. The other is his forever-loved ballet, Swan Lake. A very bad production of Swan Lake left the score of the ballet gathering dust until after the composer's death. As far as the first piano concerto is concerned, this work, too, had to struggle to be accepted. After he played through the work for his pianist friend, Nikolai Rubinstein, Rubinstein insulted Tchaikovsky by telling him that the concerto was an ill-composed and unplayable piece of music. This insult caused a major fight between Tchaikovsky and Rubinstein, and the two refused to speak to each other for a long time. This first concerto, that in my eyes is one of the greatest piano concertos ever written, was ultimately dedicated to the brilliant concert pianist Hans von Bülow, who debuted it in Boston, Massachusetts on October the 25th, 1875. The concert was a grand success. In the next year of 1876, Tchaikovsky began a relationship with a very wealthy widow by the name of Nadezhda von Meck. Von Meck would turn out to be a godsend for Tchaikovsky's financial affairs. Sometime back, von Meck had heard an orchestral work by Tchaikovsky called The Tempest, and soon after this, von Meck commissioned Tchaikovsky to write some smaller arrangements of his works for violin and piano. As far as the two's correspondence is concerned, this had to be one of the strangest relationships ever in the history of music and love. Because of the weirdness of both of their personal lives, Tchaikovsky and Nadezhda von Meck never met. Von Meck only wanted to envision Tchaikovsky as her ideal man through his music. And with this, Tchaikovsky was ecstatic because he never had to enter into a physical relationship with her. This strange relationship remained a fantasy for the both of them that would last around 14 years. Through these years, von Meck supplied Tchaikovsky with the funding and the housing and made it possible for him to finish many of his grand-scale works. These so-called therapeutical letters that the two had sent back and forth to each other for all of those years numbered at around 1,100. There was one time that the two actually saw each other in public, but after their eyes met, they both went in opposite directions as not to spoil their agreement. Later on, after Tchaikovsky and von Meck ended their relationship, Nadezhda von Meck took the young Claude Debussy under her wing in a much different way. In May of 1877, Tchaikovsky received a letter from a woman by the name of Antonina Milyakova. This letter was basically a declaration of love. In this letter, Antonina stated that she had met Tchaikovsky at the Moscow Conservatory, but records state that Tchaikovsky didn't even recall meeting her. Soon after this letter, Antonina sent another letter stating that if the two didn't meet, she would kill herself. At this time, Tchaikovsky was deep in the middle of Pushkin's verse novel, Eugene Onyegin, and he was considering the book as an opera subject. With the character Tatiana being rejected by Onyegin, Tchaikovsky began to feel guilty about not meeting the wild Antonina, and he took her up on the offer. After the two met, in 1 week's time, Antonina proposed marriage to Tchaikovsky. And in a state of madness, Tchaikovsky accepted. It is also said that he did this because he was very ashamed of his homosexuality. But even though Tchaikovsky went through his agreement of marriage, he did state that he would really never love her. The two were unfortunately married on July the 18th, 1877. And as expected, this marriage was a disaster from the moment the two said, "I do." After a while, Tchaikovsky fled to the city of Kominka after telling Antonina that he needed a rest. As far as Nadezhda von Meck was concerned, she gladly paid for Tchaikovsky's trip because she couldn't stand the fact that Tchaikovsky ever married the girl. During that August, Tchaikovsky worked on his great Fourth Symphony, which he described to von Meck as our symphony. He also worked a little on the opera Eugene Onyegin, but with all that was going on, Tchaikovsky was a mental disaster, and soon he was being pressured to return home to his wife and to the conservatory for the September term. This pressure made Tchaikovsky so crazy, he actually tried to commit suicide. By the time he returned home, he was in such a state of mental fatigue, his doctor ordered that he divorce his wife, Antonina. Tchaikovsky's brother, Anatoly, and Nicholas Rubinstein were designated to tell Antonina of the separation. After given the news, the very disturbed Antonina went out on a massive sexual frenzy and slept with many of Tchaikovsky's friends and colleagues for the next few years that produced a few illegitimate children. Sadly, Antonina ended up in a mental institution for the last 20 years of her life. Thank you. That was the amazing Mstislav Rostropovich on the cello, performing one of the variations on a Rococo theme by Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. If you just tuned in, you are listening to the Dennis Lewin radio program on BBS Internet Radio. Go to my website, www.dennislewinmusic.com, for more information. From the years 1878 to 1888, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky would write some of his most ingenious works, including the completion of his opera, Eugene Onegin, the violin concerto in D major, Serenade for Strings, the Sleeping Beauty Ballet, the final version of the Romeo and Juliet Overture, and one of his three most famous pieces of all, titled The 1812 Overture. This orchestral work was written for the unsuccessful French invasion into Russia, signifying the turning point of the Napoleonic Wars of 1812. In the spring of 1880, Nikolai Rubinstein suggested to Tchaikovsky that a grand commemorative piece should be written for this annual festival. Tchaikovsky began composing the 1812 Overture on October the 12th, 1880, and he completed the work in 6 weeks. The overture was supposed to be performed in Moscow Square in front of a cathedral with a brass band to reinforce the orchestra, accompanied by the church's bells and live on-cue cannon fire. Tchaikovsky was not crazy about this idea, and he basically wanted no part of the production. Fortunately for Tchaikovsky, I guess, there was no 1881 performance. Apparently, the production was way too ambitious for the special effects crew of the 1800s. The 1812 Overture was finally debuted 1 year later at the Arts and Industry Exhibition. It was performed by a conventional orchestra indoors with no cannon fire. You are listening to the Dennis Lewin radio program on BBS Internet Radio. go to www.DennisLewinMusic.com for more information. This next segment is brought to you by the Dean Supply Company, a one-stop shopping emporium for bar supplies, restaurant supplies, food service supplies, restaurant equipment, catering supplies, glassware, kitchen items, janitorial supplies, paper products, and party supplies at the lowest possible prices anywhere. Go to www.deansupplyco.com and order whatever you need without leaving your business or home. That's www.deansupplyco.com. You are listening to the Dennis Lewin Radio Program on BBS Internet Radio. Go to www.DennisLewinMusic.com for more information. In the year 1891, New York City opened its new music hall that would later be named Carnegie Hall. Conductor Walter Damrosch of the New York Symphony Society was given the authority to organize the events for the hall's opening concert. By chance, Damrosch wrote a letter to Tchaikovsky and asked him if he would come to America and be the first act ever to play Carnegie Hall. At this point, Tchaikovsky was 50 years old, and he was beginning to feel his age. Luckily for Damrosch, Tchaikovsky's finances and friendship were cut off by his patron, Nadezhda von Meck, which left him almost broke. So Tchaikovsky accepted Damrosch's offer, and he boarded a boat and headed for America. After arriving in the U.S., Tchaikovsky went to the first rehearsal for the event, and to his surprise, as he walked down the aisle towards the stage, he was given a lengthy standing ovation by all of the musicians and patrons in the hall. At this opening performance, Tchaikovsky conducted his coronation march and his first piano concerto with Adelaide Osdorow at the piano. After the concert, the audience and the critics raved, calling it one of the greatest musical evenings of all time. And with this, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky had made his mark in America, and he was overwhelmed with joy. The Americans loved Tchaikovsky, and they hounded the composer for autographs and interviews. While in New York, Tchaikovsky often strolled up and down Fifth Avenue, going on shopping sprees and buying cigarettes. One evening, Andrew Carnegie invited Tchaikovsky to his home for dinner, and the two got along well, considering that Carnegie had a long, deep regard for Tchaikovsky's homeland. Also, during his stay in America, Tchaikovsky traveled to Niagara Falls, and he performed concerts in Baltimore and Philadelphia. During these trips, Tchaikovsky could not get over the complete access of a bathroom and a barber on the train. And although this American trip was to near perfection, there was a bit of turmoil with the promoters who actually paid for Tchaikovsky's expenses. These two promoters were Morris Reno of the Music Hall and Ferdinand Meyer from the Kanabi Piano Company. Before Tchaikovsky left for America, he supposedly agreed to endorse Kanabi Pianos as the finest pianos in the world. But when Tchaikovsky received the contract to sign for this endorsement, he declined. This was because Tchaikovsky truly preferred Steinway and Sons over any other piano. In the year 1892, Tchaikovsky headed to his homeland of Russia, and he went on an extensive tour. He returned home in that next year, and during this stay, Tchaikovsky would write his most famous work of all. This piece would be called The Nutcracker Suite. The story of the Nutcracker is taken from the tale by E.T.A. Hoffman concerning a little girl by the name of Clara who was given a nutcracker for a Christmas present. The actual story of the Nutcracker had to be drastically tamed for the mass audiences because of its bloody, gory content that was too radical and controversial for the times. Unfortunately, the Nutcracker's debut was not the big splash that everyone thought that it would be. But in the following years, the Nutcracker, a work that Tchaikovsky basically despised, would become a major success and an annual traditional holiday concert in almost every major city in the world. In the year of 1893, aside from receiving an honorary doctorate degree from Cambridge University, Tchaikovsky would write his last masterpiece, the Symphony No. 6, Opus 74, called The Pathetique. Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky died on November the 6th, 1893, in St. Petersburg, Russia, 9 days after the premiere of his Sixth Symphony. He was 53 years old. His death, to this day, is still a very controversial subject pertaining to the way that he died. Some say he died of cholera that was brought on by drinking unboiled water, but most historians unofficially believe that Tchaikovsky committed suicide. In the year 1978, the Soviet scholar Alexandra Orlova told a story that was dictated to her in the year 1966 by Alexander Voitov, who worked at the Russian Museum in Leningrad. According to this story, a member of the Russian aristocracy in Tchaikovsky's time had written a letter accusing Tchaikovsky of having a homosexual relationship with his nephew. This letter was given to a man by the name of Nikolai Jacobi, a very high-ranking civil servant. The aristocrat wanted Jacobi to present the letter to the Tsar and to have Tchaikovsky persecuted for the act. But Jacobi, who was a classmate of Tchaikovsky, was hesitant of this because he was afraid that a scandal like this would tarnish the school uniform. So, instead, Jacobi instituted a court trial where 6 of Tchaikovsky's contemporaries from his alma mater were called to testify. Tchaikovsky was summoned for this trial on Halloween of 1893. When the trial was over, the court deliberated for 5 hours and came back with a verdict. This verdict stated that Tchaikovsky should do the right thing and kill himself. 6 days later, Tchaikovsky was found dead. That was the great Sir George Schulte and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra performing Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture. You have been listening to the Dennis Lewin Radio Program on BBS Internet Radio. Tune in next week at 7 o'clock p.m. Saturday evening and hear another story about one of the greatest composers or musicians in the history of music. And please go to my website, www.DennisLewinMusic.com, that's DennisLewin Music, and find out how to sponsor or donate to this program. Only you can keep it on the air. One more time, that's www.DennisLewinMusic.com, turning you on to classical music. Talk to you next week.